ShareCare is the leading online health and wellness engagement platform, providing millions of consumers with a personal, results-oriented experience by connecting them to the most qualified health resources and programs they need to improve their health. It's time now for ShareCare Radio on RadioMD.com. Here's your host, Dr. Daria.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. It's Dr. Daria. I want to dive into our news of the week, but we did hear from one of our listeners that she's in the hospital today, so we wanted to send her a quick shout out. We're glad that she's feeling better and hope that she's back on her feet soon. Diving into our first news story, and that's about a physician shortage. It's something that I, as myself, as an ER doctor, worry about because I do see patients coming in with difficulty reaching and getting in to see doctors. So the Association of American Medical Colleges predicts that with aging baby boomers and a growing population, there's going to be a shortage of at least 46,000 physicians within 10 years. Now, a lot of people differ on the exact statistics. It really depends on how you calculate how many physicians each person is going to need. And that's partly based on the fact that there are currently around 28,000 residency spots in the United States. Now, 20 years ago, a cap was placed on that number, and that number was supposed to be a temporary cap, but it became permanent. So we have not really increased those numbers over the past 20 years. So the AAMC is calling on Congress to immediately fund an additional 3,000 residency slots. They're saying there's going to be a shortage of anywhere from 12,000 to 30,000 primary care doctors and a shortage of 28,000 to 60,000 subspecialists. Now, although physician supply in the U.S. is projected to increase modestly between 2013 and 2025, the projected demand for physician services is expected to grow as much as 17%. Now, it's really important to take this into account now because the number of years it takes to develop a doctor that's actually able to fully see patients on their own is decades, or is a decade. So they have to start training people now, planning for them to become physicians so that we don't have this problem in 2025. Now, a recent study that came out, you know, we've heard a lot about stress and the impact of stress on our health. This most recent one was about using a mindfulness-based stress reduction, or MBSR, to decrease fasting glucose and improve quality of life in overweight and obese women. So it was developed by a researcher at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. And they did this mindfulness-based practice, which involved paying attention to your thoughts, feelings, and kind of just how you feel overall, just in the present moment. Did some exercises on that and some breathing awareness. And they studied 86 overweight or obese women. And they received this intervention of either the mindfulness-based research or just regular health education. They did that for 8 weeks. And they found that in the mindfulness group, their stress scores were significantly decreased compared to the other group, and their fasting glucose, which is a measure of if somebody has diabetes, significantly decreased as well. Not only that, their quality of life improved. So pretty impressive study. Not a huge number, but very impressive nonetheless. And it really supports the idea that we need to be including more mindfulness-based therapies and things like that, in addition to medications and other interventions, to really create a total package to help somebody improve their health. Now, you've probably heard about chemicals that are called endocrine disruptors. You may have heard of that, including BPA is one we talk about a lot. And a new study finds exposure of low doses of these hormone-disrupting chemicals early in life can actually alter gene expression in the liver. That can lead to problems with liver function, increased risk for obesity, and other metabolic diseases. Now, the study was early. It was studied in rats, and it exposed them when they were infants to industrial chemicals that we find in our own human environment, including BPA. Now, BPA and other certain chemicals, they're called hormone disruptors or endocrine disruptors because they appear to cause problems with just that, the action of our hormones. BPA in particular appears in many plastic and resin household products and food containers, and including until recently, they've removed it from most baby bottles, sippy cups, and infant formula packages, but it used to also be in those. And the investigators reported that BPA is, and another endocrine disruptor called tributylin, which is an additive in paint and textiles, can cause fatty liver and even affect their genes. Now, that reprogramming of the liver could potentially drive obesity. So it really is a sign that we need to keep understanding what are these chemicals that are around us and in our food, and to really understand the impact that they're having. There was another study that actually studied BPA, but this one was studying the impact of on dental enamel, so that enamel that we have on our teeth. And this, again, was a study done in rats, these poor rats getting exposed to BPA. And they showed that early exposure to BPA may cause what was called molar incisor hypomineralization, or MIH. Essentially, it affects that dental enamel, which is the hard covering on our teeth, and causes white or brown opaque spots on your molars and incisors, making them sensitive to pain, sensitive to hot and cold, painful, and even more prone to cavities. So really another thing raising the concerns of these endocrine disruptors and the impact that they could have on us as adults and as youth and children, something we need to look at more. Now, this was an interesting study that looked at brain structure and how it, you know, varies depending on how trusting somebody is of others. So this was a recent study out of the University of Georgia, and it showed differences in brain structure and found that certain parts of the brain are key for trust. Now, this study was looking at it from the view of somebody who has autism, because conditions like autism are characterized by difficulty in kind of processing the world socially and the ability to trust people, which is why they do often have difficulty with trust. So understanding the regions key for that area and who's at risk for that problem can help scientists know better how to intervene and to treat patients with that risk. Now, there's a new study out that says something that I have long believed, and that's that having a sense of purpose in life may lower your risk of heart disease and stroke. Now, purpose in life, we mean giving yourself a sense of meaning, direction, you know, feeling that life is worth living, you know, what gets you up in the morning out of bed. And this was from new analysis from Mount Sinai. It showed that a high sense of purpose was associated with a 23% reduction in death from all causes, 19% reduced risk of heart attack, stroke, or need for a coronary bypass surgery, or a cardiac stenting procedure. Now, it's really kind of fascinating. You know, it shows this strong relationship between having a sense of purpose and protection from dying or having a cardiovascular event. And again, that can potentially save your life. I see this in my own practice. Patients that I have come in that truly have purpose, have connections, versus the one that seem to have lost that. And it really does seem to impact their health overall and the drive that they have. So it's always important that we ask ourselves, you know, what is my purpose? And really find what gets us going. Another study about, you know, pollutants that we've talked about. I mentioned two of those other studies. This one said that the level of pollutant accumulation could be linked to our obesity levels. Now, this is from a team of scientists out from Spain, and they confirmed a relation between levels of environmental pollutants that we accumulate in our body and our level of obesity. Now, they looked at fat tissue of about 300 people, men and women in Spain, and they looked for the presence of substances called persistent organic pollutants, or POPs. Now, those can remain in the environment for years, even decades, without degrading. So some substances that even have been banned are still existing. And we're exposed to them mainly through our diet, and they accumulate in our body fat. So the ones that they looked at include DDE, which is the main metabolite of pesticide DDT, which was used all over the world in the 1980s. They also looked at the insecticide lindane, which is frequently used in agriculture and in certain medications for lice and scabies, and polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, which are used in numerous industrial equipment and are still present in some old electronic transformers. So a lot of these, even though they're not currently used, they still exist in the environment. And they showed that 100% of participants in this survey had detectable levels of one or more of these compounds. Now, there's evidence that these may even be obesogenic. So the question is, are these compounds just being stored in our fat cells, or are they actually causing people to have more fat cells? And that's really something that we're going to need to look at more, because we know that fat itself has put people at higher risk for heart disease, stroke, and these patients also had higher levels of cholesterol and triglycerides. So there you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at my handle, @DrDaria. Now you're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and to stay well.